Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Coronado Global Resources fourth quarter investor call. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a discussion of results from the CEO and the CFO, followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Jerry Spindler, Chief Executive Officer, Coronado. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. Thank you to all participants for joining Coronado's fourth quarter investor call. This morning, we released our fourth quarter report to the ASX and the SEC, in which we outline our production and sales volumes for the quarter, as well as other key information related to our safety and financial performance. A more detailed outline of our financial position and results will be released to the market on February 23rd with our Form 10-K and full year's earnings release. We will convene another call then to outline in more depth our financial outcomes and our forward plans. During the fourth quarter, the Coronado community was deeply saddened by the tragic fatality at our Curragh mine. On the 21st of November, the operations were temporarily suspended when an employee, Mr. Clark Peden, was fatally injured while working on the dragline operations. The company extends its deepest sympathies and sincere condolences to Mr. Peden's family, friends, and colleagues, and continues to provide counseling and support services. On November 24th, Curragh resumed all non-dragline operations in a gradual and phased approach following directives from Resources Safety and Health Queensland inspectors to isolate the accident site and suspend all dragline operations. On December 10th, inspectors lifted the directive to suspend all dragline operations and Curragh recommenced dragline activities, including return-to-work safety and training sessions before operational shifts restarted. Following the resumption of dragline operations, no ongoing directives or restrictions on the Curragh mine are in force. The investigation into this tragic event continues. Turning our attention to COVID-19, Coronado remains focused on the safety and well-being of all employees and contracting parties as we continue to execute action plans to manage the risks associated with COVID-19 and its variants. The threat of COVID-19 has been ever-present throughout the year, and the Coronado COVID-19 Steering Committee has continued to remain vigilant in dealing with the Delta and Omicron variants and their impacts on our people, operations, and customers. Sanitization processes, social distancing, mask wearing where safe to do so, vaccine advocacy, vaccine rollout, educational materials, and regular pre-start communications continue to form the base level commitments by the company in tackling the virus and keeping our people informed. The U.S. segment vaccine incentive program is having meaningful results, with vaccination rates doubling during this quarter. Two-thirds of our U.S. employees are now fully vaccinated, and these numbers are growing, underpinning greater workforce availability and fewer production interruptions in 2022. In Queensland, 90% of the population is fully vaccinated, and the company's efforts are now firmly behind the encouragement of booster shots to ensure prolonged protection. As far as general safety, the total recordable injury frequency rates in Australia and the U.S. continue to remain below relevant industry averages. In Australia, the 12-month rolling average total recordable injury frequency rates as of December 31st, was 3.07, compared to a rate of 9.40 at the end of December 2020, reflecting a 67% year-on-year improvement. In the U.S., the 12-month rolling average total reportable incident rate was 2.51 compared to a rate of 2.28 in the prior year. During the quarter, the Buchanan mine safely completed a longwall move, and pleasingly, the Logan operations ended the quarter with no reportable safety incidents. Turning to production, the group finished the year with run-of-mine production of 26.4 million tons and saleable production of 17.4 million tons, exceeding the revised guidance targets. The U.S. operations led the way with annual saleable production of 6.3 million tons, which was 24% higher than prior year as the mines returned to normal operating capacity following a difficult 2020 when the mines were temporarily idled for 2 months. In the December quarter, the U.S. operation saleable production of 1.5 million tons is 11% lower than the September quarter, due principally to the aforementioned Buchanan longwall move and lower person hours at both Logan and Buchanan over the vacation period, traditionally between Christmas and New Year's, combined with the vacation period impact of new COVID-19 variants on labor availability. Australian saleable production levels of 2.6 million tons in the December quarter were impacted by the temporary suspension of activities at the Curra mine following the safety incident and compounded by above average rainfall across the Bowen Basin caused by the La Nina weather pattern. The town of Blackwater, the closest town to the Curra mine, received 291 millimeters of rain in the December quarter, which was almost double the quarterly average and was the highest rainfall level since the March quarter of 2018. Despite the high levels of rain, Curra's water management infrastructure and processes performed well. December quarter sales volumes of 2.8 million tons from Curra were consistent with prior quarter. U.S. sales volumes of 1.5 million tons were impacted by, as we mentioned, the longwall move and some slippage into January. Full year sales volumes were 17.8 million tons within the revised guidance targets. Curra's focus for the first quarter of 2022 from a production perspective is to continue to drive operational performance in compliance to the mine plan. Under the One Curra plan, all contracting parties and employees are committed to a single mine plan understood by all and increasing the operational efficiencies to ensure adequate coal availability to meet current higher priced environments. In addition, the current main mining area will introduce a seventh fleet for 12 months commencing in February to enhance waste and coal mining activities. The U.S. operations will continue to optimize production levels to meet current strong demand and take advantage of the heightened price environment. Coronado maintains a competitive advantage compared to other met coal producers given its geographical diversification and ability to access the Chinese market from the U.S. while import restrictions on Australian source coal continue. I'll now hand over to Gerhard to talk about our financial position and market outlook. Gerhard?
Thank you, Jerry, and good day, everybody, and welcome to this investor call from our offices here in Brisbane. Let me start by reminding the participants on this call that all financial information stated in today's release is unaudited and is quoted in U.S. dollars. We will release our audited full year 2021 financial results on the 23rd of February, and at that time advise the market of 2022 guidance metrics. Today, I'm pleased to announce that Coronado has met or exceeded all revised guidance targets for 2021. Saleable production was 17.4 million tons, exceeding revised guidance of between 17 and 17.2 million tons. Sales volumes of 17.8 million tons was within the revised guidance range of 17.7 and 17.9 million tons. Capital expenditure of $91 million aligned with revised guidance of under $100 million. Mining costs per ton finished the year at $65.7 per ton, lower than revised guidance targets of between $66 and $68 per ton. And Coronado completed the year with a net cash position of $123 million. Full year 2021 revenue was $2.1 billion, up 47% from the prior year, as we saw pricing increase dramatically on the back of strong steel demand and tight market supply in the second half of this year. Coronado reported record quarter revenue of $775 million for the December quarter, reflecting a 35% improvement over the September quarter. Coronado's closing cash, net cash position of $123 million is comprised of a record year-end closing cash balance of $438 million and a lower senior secured notes value of $315 million following the 10% notes redemption during the quarter. Further enhancing cash flows in the quarter was the completion of the Amonate non-core asset sale for $30 million. Coronado has realized a almost $15 million pre-tax gain from the sale and will now no longer incur holding costs associated with this asset. In November, S&P Global Ratings raised its issuer credit rating to B from B- and confirmed a stable outlook for the company. In addition, S&P raised the issue level rating on the company's senior secured notes to B+ from B. In relation to our costs, our full-year mining costs per ton, or FOR costs, of $65.7 per ton were lower than revised guidance targets, but up from $55.6 per ton in the prior year. Mining costs per ton are higher primarily due to the impacts of lower Australian sales volumes and higher exchange rates. Curragh is impacted by the movements in FX, as the majority of its costs in Australia are denominated in Australian dollars, but we report our results, of course, in US dollars. In 2021, the average US Australian exchange rate was 75 cents compared to 69 cents in the prior year. We estimate that for every 1 cent movement in FX, equates to 65 cents per ton group cost variation. Therefore, we estimate that approximately $4 per ton of the variance relates to exchange rate, with the balance associated with the lower Australian production volume in 2021 versus 2020. And while we not release market guidance until February, we do expect Curragh production volumes in 2022 to be higher than 2021. On coal markets, turning our attention to that aspect here, during the quarter we saw average Australian and US index benchmarks further increase. They increase almost by the day, chasing records by the day at the moment. During the December quarter, the average premium low vol FOB Australian index price increased to $369 per ton compared to the average in the prior quarter of $260. $4 per ton, an increase of 40%. The average low-vol U.S. East Coast index price has seen a similar increase to $375 per ton, up from an average of $280 per ton in the prior quarter. The met coal prices for shipments from both the U.S. and Australian operations reached record levels during the quarter and remain elevated due to the continuation of strong global demand and tight supply. Coronado's average realized met coal price for the December quarter was $214 per ton, up nearly 50% compared to the September quarter of $144 per ton. The average realized price reflects a mixture of FOB and FOR trade terms across all grades of met coal sold and also includes the lower 2021 U.S. domestic annual contract price. Coronado seaborne contracts typically realize an average 3 months lag in price compared to the index price of the day. In Australia, cargoes are traditionally negotiated on a quarterly basis with reference to the average prior 3 months index. In the US, cargoes are determined on a negotiated price in advance, sometimes up to 6 months in advance. Therefore, given average benchmark index prices were higher during the fourth quarter and the U.S. segment will now start realizing the significantly higher price, 2022 domestic contracts from January, Coronado expects that the average realized met coal price for operations in the first quarter of 2022 to be at least to at least mirror the December quarter. Strong ex-China demand combined with the continued supply tightness across the globe continued to underpin met coal prices. Supply tightness has been driven by above average rainfalls in Australia, logistics chain issues in North America, and the ever-present threat of COVID-19. Demand growth in ex-China is forecast to continue as government-sponsored growth projects continue to be approved to boost economic growth. And in China, CFR met coal prices fell substantially in the quarter to more closely align with the Australian and US FOB pricing indices. The price correction resulted from the government moderating steel production and enhancing the production and use of domestic coal resources. As a result, cargoes into China slowed in the December quarter, and still demand growth is being seen with China seeking Buchanan tonnages for January and February shipments while retaining the embargo on, in general on Australian-sourced coal. And looking forward, Coronado expects pricing to remain at elevated levels in the short term due to supply constraints. Looking beyond the near term, Coronado expects met coal prices to moderate in 2022 as supply recovers and lifts in response to the current high prices, but remain above average historical averages for the balance of 2022. I'll hand back to the operator to take any questions.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star then one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star and then two. And if you are on a speakerphone, please pick up your handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from Paul Young at Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Happy New Year, Jerry and Gerhard. Hope you had a good break and good to catch up. First question is on Curra. Obviously, a pretty tough year for the mine, particularly in the second half with the tragic fatality, but also the wet weather, which is obviously ongoing at the moment in the Bowen. I'm just curious with the seventh fleet addition, with the and the slight sort of rejig of the contractor strategy there, etc. When do you think, based on that and the wet weather, when you can get the stripping up at Curra and actually you can start seeing a lift in run of mine coal volumes?
Cautioning against making any predictions, we're fortunate in having Doug Thompson, who I think is on mute right now, available for the call. Doug, as you know, is currently the manager and CEO of the Australian operations. And frankly, I'd like to direct this question to Doug. Are you available, Doug?
Thanks, Jerry.
Evidently not. No, go ahead.
Thanks, Jerry.
Go ahead.
In answering the question, we've put together a mine plan that supports immediate production focus and then longer-term investment, like a midlife investment into the mine to set up strike length for our drag lines. With the four drag lines, we clearly see advantage of using those productively into the future with the mining operations. And the near-term investment in this extra dirt is doing exactly that, is enhancing our drag line strike length of the mine and creating space for productivities, but most importantly is consistent coal flows as we build input ROM and inventory stocks to get consistent flow to our prep plant. So as Jerry said, we don't want to forecast prematurely, but we have a solid plan that's been worked through and reviewed by external parties supporting the success in the plan that we've put in place. And the team is diligently setting about executing that plan at the moment. And I'm very pleased with the work that they've achieved to date through the back end of last year and the first start of this year.
Okay, thank you, Doug. I can only add that I am pleased as well.
Yeah, great. Thanks for that, Doug. Thanks for that, Jerry. Maybe a question for Gerhard on the market. Gerhard, what have you seen from China in the last sort of 3 months with the drop in steel volumes as far as demand from China? And at the moment, you know, maybe around the grounds, around the globe by mine, like, where are you seeing the best sort of demand strength or resilience at the moment across the market by you know, from steel mills, which regions?
Yeah, look, China has been subdued, of course, you know, and I think a lot of market participants link it to the Winter Olympics, and I've seen comments that steel production will ramp up after, so we might see a little bit of a change after the Winter Olympics. In fact, a lot of people are convinced that's going to happen. So subdued demand out of China in general, that hasn't changed the fact that there is simply not a lot of spot in the market, and yet there is a lot of demand in the market, and demand is driven by a number of things, amongst which, you know, stimulus packages is one. So we see basically the steel markets ex-China have completely recovered and beyond. What is driving the current record chasing prices is really a massive lack of spot in the market, which could become systemic, to be quite honest, after the rebalancing of the met coal supply chain after China boycotted Australian coal. There's a good chance that a lot of this coal has been contracted away, and therefore also spot has been taken away out of the market. This whole situation is reflected in the indices. So you see now that the CFR China index is down to 405, whereas the Australian benchmark, so-called benchmark, climbed to $430 per ton, another record.
Yeah, okay, thanks, Gerhard. It's obviously an interesting dynamic there. Just on your inventories, how did your inventories finish? You know, I'm sort of looking at, you know, is there sort of a working cap, you know, unwind, you know, potentially in the next 3-4 months?
We don't give specific guidance on that on this call, but I wouldn't expect too big of a difference.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Last question for me, and again another one for you, Gerhard. Just on dividend policy, obviously a board decision. But, you know, with your guidance, you finished in a net cash position, so the business is in good shape. How do you think about, you know, the current, you know, dividend policy of, you know, 60 to 100% of free cash flow payout? Is that still relevant? Or, you know, is a switch to a minimum payout on earnings, you know, more relevant? How do you think about dividend policy, you know, in 2022?
Yeah, at this stage, that remains in place, is 60 to 100%. Of course, there's a big cash build-up, as you have seen. But important also that today on this call, you don't give any guidance on dividends.
Okay, fair enough. Thanks very much, gents. I'll pass it on.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Sam McGovern at Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hey guys, you know, good quarter, and you know, just following up on the question regarding the balance sheet. You know, given that you are now in a net cash position, can you give us a sense in terms of how you think about, you know, what you want the balance sheet to look like over the course of a cycle? You know, how much debt on a gross basis you feel like is appropriate, and then how much cash you want to keep there, both from a you know, sort of a minimum liquidity standpoint, but also from a strategic standpoint to keep optionality open for you guys.
Yeah, look, in general, all options are on the table here, but, you know, my view is that a strong cash position provides flexibility and preserves the company throughout all cycles. So I always said that I want to maintain some form of cash on the balance sheet, you know, of course. What we have right now, $438 million, that's quite a lot. And there are certain options what we can do with it, which I won't outline here, but again, all options are open. But in the end, we want to have a healthy net debt position. Doesn't need to be net debt free, but it should be a healthy net debt position. I'll go back to probably what I said before, you know, it could be anything between $100 and $200 million.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. I'll pass it along.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Glyn Lawcock at Barrenjoey. Please go ahead.
Good evening, Jerry. Happy New Year. I just wondered if you could talk a little bit about the US business. I mean, you've got Greenbrier idle, been trying to sell it for a while. I mean, the current market's probably the best you're going to see. Just what's the opportunity to maybe turn that back on while you do try and sell it? And then secondly, I think I read somewhere there was an issue at the port. There was an explosion. I know, I don't think it was the terminal you shipped through. But are there any logistics issues we need to consider if you want to try and increase your volume in 22 versus last year, thanks, out of the US?
Well, thank you for that. First of all, while it is possible to conjure profitable operations in this market at Greenbrier, the issue is that Greenbrier is not a large operation compared to the other things we have going on. It diverts a lot of management attention. It would involve some startup costs. And the market always, I mean, it's forecast to go down. It always is. And so there's a question about how long the market would support profitable operations at Greenbrier. In the short term, the market supports a sale. And we are hopeful that we will execute one that will keep us indifferent to whether to losing the opportunity to continue operating the property. And that would be the position we'd take right now. As of a week ago when we reviewed our shipping and operations, the railroads are performing as well as they have been, reasonably well, considering some of the issues that generally the CSX and others have been faced with. You're quite right. We're not impacted by the issue at the ports. We're still continuing to ship. Buchanan is receiving a standard level of trains, and we're at least seeing, we are not seeing transportation being an issue at either the Logan operations or at Buchanan currently.
Okay. And Jerry, if I could then turn back to Australia. I mean, obviously we've opened up now, you know, the border is open and COVID seems to be running rife up and down the East Coast. What's it like in terms of absenteeism at Curra? Are you experiencing COVID-related absenteeism, or is it something we need to consider on the Eastern Seaboard? I mean, clearly some industries are really suffering with, you know, 30-40% absenteeism. Just any comments you could make? Thanks.
Currently for us, it's not so much the absenteeism that's an issue, but we're, as we noted, putting on an additional fleet. We're making more demands, or the mine plan and the adherence to the mine plan is making more demands on the contractors. Turnover is higher than it has been, and there is some impact there. But I wouldn't characterize it as absenteeism. It rather should be viewed as some delay in our ability to put on the crews we need to get the fifth fleet or to get the additional fleet going and ramp the production up.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Alex Rain at Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hi, Jerry, Gerhardt, and team. Congratulations on a solid net cash position out of the year. Just got a couple of questions. The first one is I noticed like the comments in your release, you know, say March quarter pricing will be at least mirror the December quarter. And, you know, you mentioned the December average index for Australia jumped over, you know, 40% quarter on quarter and with a 3-month lag. So wouldn't this imply that this comment may be, you know, somewhat over-conservative, or are there, you know, other factors in the mix, such as, like, more off-spec sales in a quarter? I'll come back with other questions. Thanks.
Yeah.
Gerhard, do you want to?
Yeah. No, look, let me respond to that. Look, without giving too much outlook, and I indicated that before, quarter one is probably looking very positive given these price lags, and that every day we see the benchmark is chasing another record. So given that lag, it's probably fair to say that we can expect a very good quarter one from a pricing perspective.
Right, understood. And just a follow-up question on the new fleet at Curra. From memory, it's an additional 1.2 million ton run. Is that a rough estimate?
Gerard, you probably heard that better than I did. Do you want to?
I heard that better, and we're not giving any guidance on fleets or anything for quarter one.
Okay, got it. And lastly, on capital management, given you're sitting on a solid net cash position, what's your, priority rank for cap management? Is dividend reinstatement the top priority, or searching for M&A, and is buyback on the table?
Yeah, let me respond again. Let me just elaborate a little bit. we announced our financial year 21. And for, outlook for 2022 guidance in February when we release our Form 10-K. And at that time, we'll advise the market of our cash management plans for the year ahead. We are currently operating in, I have to say, and everybody on the call, unprecedented markets with very strong demand for met coal. That is driven by a number of things, probably ESG as well, and tight supply. Far cry from where pricing was at the beginning of 2021, and even in April or even 1st May. Coal pricing today is at a record high, and it's chasing, as I said before, chasing every day. I mean, just overnight it came back up another $10 per ton, the Australian benchmark. But we have the added uncertainty around the potential impacts to production and supply chains from Omicron, plus the threat of seasonal wet weather, Chinese boycotts on Australian coal, and so on. In uncertain times, maintaining a prudent cash balance provides flexibility that I think we should retain. Furthermore, we are currently finalizing our financial year 22 budget, as the impact of the tragic fatality in quarter four unfortunately pushed out the finalization of that budget until now. Once the budget is finalized, we will be in a position to advise the market of our plans at our next call end of February. I think it's reasonable that the market can expect capital expenditure to be higher in 2022 than in 2021. As we reinvest in the business, and we're also seeing inflationary pressures on costs, and particularly in the U.S. It's no secret the U.S. sees, in general, inflation of between 7 and 8% at the moment. But in summary, all options are on the table here for us. And in general, a strong cash reserve provides flexibility and preserves also the company throughout all cycles.
Understood. I'll pass it on. Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, if you do wish to ask a question, please register by pressing star 1 on your telephone and waiting for your name to be announced. Your next question is from Paul Young at Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Yeah, back again. Thanks, gents. Just a few smaller questions on the US operations. The first one is, domestic sales this year. You're guiding to sort of third of sales to domestic steel mills. Is that up a little bit on expectations on 2021? And then secondly, the free on rail versus FOB component, Gerhard, on the export sales. Is there any way you can help us out with respect to, what the split will be or how that's changing this year?
Go ahead, Gerhard.
I can help you out. Look, what you have to, I think we talked about that before. What we have to do, if you take Buchanan, try to find an example. If you take a Buchanan, you need to deduct essentially the discount from tier one to tier two quality. So let's take an example from the 7th of January, which was just about 2 weeks ago, less than 2 weeks ago, where the CFR China index price was $375 per ton or so. You take a tier one to tier two discount of $50 per ton, then you get, you know, Chinese hard coking coal mid-vol CFR price $325 per ton. You take ocean freight away, $60 per ton, US dollars per ton, which is about 17% of the index. You take rail freight away, $30 per ton. You take a quality adjustment out, call it 5%. You take a China tariff out, 3%, and you take a, let's say a trader's margin out of $10-$15 per ton, and you get to FOR sales price of $195 thereabouts. So that gave you, I mean, this call is recorded. So if you work this backwards, it gives you a very clear view on how we back calculate from FOB. You know, published FOB prices to realized FOR prices.
Yeah, that's
let me kind of a little bit. Let me comment a little bit on the domestic market. As we've always said, we use the domestic U.S. market as a hedge. Some years you make money on that hedge, some years you don't. Last year, we did not, because the market turned better towards the end of the year and the export opportunities would have been, frankly, more profitable than the domestic business we took, but who knew? This year, frankly, we saw a big uplift, and we've announced that prior, to the average price that we're now getting for our domestic business. And we had the opportunity to put to bed a large portion of that business at prices higher than we expected and cover essentially all of the operating or nearly all of the operating costs of the U.S. operations of Cannon and Logan combined. We took that opportunity. And I think that hedge will be in the money and remain in the money for the rest of the year. But we're in a position that if it doesn't, and the export market continues to be so good, that hedge turns again to be out of the money, then we're going to enjoy an export price, and Australia will see the benefit, and the leverage in Australia will provide the benefit that would make this any different in any case. So that's the way we look at it, and that's the way we think it'll turn out this year.
Yeah, thanks, Jerry. Last question, just while we stay on, I guess, sales, et cetera, just looking back to Curra, revenue was maybe a touch softer for the second half than maybe some thought. And I know you called out product mix and access to the met coal seams or lack of access. How does the product mix change or improve this half relative to what we've just seen?
I wouldn't give any outlook, Paul, at this stage. But you have seen an improvement so far, quarter on quarter. So, but there's no outlook for quarter one yet.
Okay, that's fine. All right. Well, all the best for the full year results, and look forward to chatting to you then, and looking forward to the guidance for 2022.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Pawan Punjabi from the Hexagon Hedge Fund. Please go ahead.
Hello. Am I audible? Hello.
Your line is
fine. Hello.
Yeah, thank you. I just wanted to know the dividend policy. I just missed the first line of it. Can you please clarify on any plans on dividends?
Yeah, I think I elaborated on that before. The dividend policy as it is stands, we're not changing it, and all options are on the table, and more on this when we have our financial year end update at the end of February when we release the 10K.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you. Your next question comes from John Ogden from Eastern Value Limited. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Excuse me. Hello, guys. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah.
John Ogden here. Yeah, hi. I've got a few. The first one is just on X-Coal. If you can just tell me if you're still using X-Coal as a distributor and what margin they're making. That's the first question. The second one is just on coal quality. If you can just tell me the quality at the various mines. I mean, is Curra actually at the benchmark hard coking coal, the Australian, you know, quote unquote good stuff? Is it actually at that level, or is it a lower sort of semi-soft or PCI product? So what I'm getting at is again just getting at the sort of discount or not that you have to the headline coking coal indices, and if you could also just expand that into the Australian products as well, that'd be great. The other one is how high is your bar to do M&A? Are you thinking in this environment you want to you know, look at M&A, or are you more of a mindset to really work these assets really well and just, you know, in this environment, become a sort of great cash cow and pass dividends back to shareholders? So just trying to get the corporate DNA on that. And any other sort of color on the market situation in terms of supply, what you're seeing in Australia and America, if more supply response is coming on. So that's why I think Gerhard was feeling a bit more conservative about the second half of this year. Thank you for that.
Gerhard, let me handle the first part, and the supply issue I'll turn over to you. The first point on X-Coal is not a distributor. They're a broker. So they take title to the coal. They sell it. Currently, most coal companies do not, because of the consolidation in the steel industry, run their own sales forces internationally. Most coal companies use brokers, and that's a fundamental requirement to get into China. X-Coal is still a broker we use going into China. It's not the only broker we use. So there's a competitive arrangement between what X-Coal pays us for their business and what we can obtain from other brokers. And we always take, of course, the best price we can possibly get. So X-Coal competes on that basis. We have no insights into what their margins are. We have no insights into what any of the brokers' margins are. We simply know that with all the broker opportunities we've got, X-Coal is competitive, and we use them only when they are. The second issue on the product mix in Acura, we publish and have published results on what the average percent of realization to benchmark is. We sell a broad range of coals at Curra. We sell PCI. We sell semisoft. We sell hard cooking coals, and we get a discount on all of them. None of them come at the premium hard cooking coal benchmark, and that's true for nearly all producers in any case. So we couldn't guide to what that would be this year, and there will be on the 22nd calculations for what it is. Last year, there are existing calculations for what it has been in prior years as well on a percentage of the benchmark. Gerhard, do you want to comment on the market?
Yeah, when I look at the market, I look at three or four input factors here. Let me go through them because it's quite interesting, of course. when prices are, you know, met coal prices are at record highs. So first is, of course, you know, we look at the global economy, and we have seen that, you know, there's a rebalancing act happening globally. Fair to say that the economy in 2021 will grow slower than in 2021. Omicron has threatened a little bit of demand recovery, but we are coming out of this Omicron cycle now. I think experts expect a peak happening in February or March, so certainly this quarter, so should be positive after that. And we could see a delay in tapering of government bond purchases by central banks that might actually keep, in general, commodity prices higher for a longer period. China could provide met coal demand upside after the Winter Olympics, as I said before. That's what the market believes, and that's kind of the paradigm we have seen coming out of China on a regular basis. And I think also the Europeans' energy crisis will keep thermal coal prices elevated, and we see now prices in thermal coal above $200. Not that we are in thermal coal, we are not, but of course the thermal coal price is always a floor for met coal prices. So that's the first one, global economy. The second one, supply constraints and disruption will remain, I guess, a feature this year in the met coal markets, as at least in the first half. Seaborne supply over quarter one out of, you know, Australia, Canada, US, Mongolia, Russia will be lower than 2019 and 2020, despite high seaborne prices and the availability of additional production capacity. We have seen Australia's La Nina impacts on prices and actually on production as well. We see that the strike at Warrior in the US continues, and of course Omicron remains a high risk to the supply chain. So that all gives sentiment for higher prices, and we see, in fact, you know, I think the met coal industry and steel industry is India now a little bit on the back foot. They're chasing, they certainly need to chase more met coal tons. They need to rebuild stock, as they probably were betting on falling prices, and the opposite happened. So the third element I see is cost inflation, to push up costs through margins. So the cost inflation, particularly labor and energy costs, is a global issue. We are not so much impacted here in Australia, but certainly Europe and the US. It will continue to impact met coal mining in general in 2022. Ultimately, we'll see the probably 90th percentile hard coking coal mine marginal cost to grow from, I think it was $130 per ton per wood mech in 2021 to probably, yeah, $140 in 2022 with more risk on the upside. And then I think the fourth element always, which used to be my first element, was China. Always look at China. Lower met coal consumption could mean lower seaborne imports in a way, but then global supply issues translate into lower spot cargo availability, which is actually worsened by the China ban. As I said before, I've seen some major met coal producers have redirected and rebalanced their supply chain and pushed a lot of tons into long-term contracts. So a lot of spot has been taken out of the market. And I think in general for 2022, China will maintain the ban on Australian coal with no, you know, avenues for improvement in the relationship at the moment. So that hasn't hurt us. It has hurt us, you know, probably last year for 6-9 months. But we see the impact now. It has elevated met coal prices. So overall, I see at least in the first half of this year a very, you know, very positive, supportive met coal prices. And I think the market, I don't give guidance too much, but the market sees that met coal prices over 2022 will not drop below $200 per ton.
The last part of your question had to do with acquisitions. Look, we We have grown through acquisition. It's in our DNA. We couldn't help ourselves but to look at the opportunities. So if there's an opportunity out there that's attractive, we'll look at it.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. I'll hand back to Jerry for any closing remarks.
Thank you. And thanks to everyone for participating in the call today. Should you have any follow-up questions, please reach out to our investor relations team. A replay of this call will be available on our website shortly. And in closing, last but not least, I would like to thank all the Coronado employees for their continued dedication to the company in what has been a particularly tough and busy year. The board and executive management acknowledge the hard work performed by all the employees, all of you, to ensure our business remains a leading independent producer of steelmaking coal. And the board, particularly, as I do, thank you extensively. Thank you.
Thank you. That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you all for participating. You may now disconnect your lines.